From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made in the spring of 2014 when Dartmouth political science professor Brendan Nyhan released the results of a study about what we believe. For 3 years, he and his team followed a group of almost 2,000 parents, all of whom had at least one child under the age of 17, to test a simple relationship. Could various pro-vaccination campaigns change parental attitudes toward vaccines? Their goal was to test whether facts, evidence, science, emotions, or stories could make people change their minds. The results were dramatic. According to the New York Times, quote, a whole lot of nothing. Despite the evidence, their work did nothing to affect parents' intentions to vaccinate their children. And for the parents who had the most entrenched opposition to vaccines, it even decreased their intention to vaccinate, a phenomenon known as the backfire effect, when more evidence and more factual information actually makes the situation worse for a non-believer. It's depressing, Nyhan said. Quote, we were definitely depressed about that. So why do Americans tend to have certain issues believing things or not believing things, even when the evidence tells them they should or shouldn't? My guest for the hour is a passionate believer in changing his mind, if the evidence is strong enough. Guy Harrison is a champion of skepticism. He's the author of a number of books on the subject, including 50 Popular Beliefs That People Think Are True, Think, Why You Should Question Everything, and the forthcoming Good Thinking, What You Need to Know to Be Smarter, Safer, Wealthier, and Wiser. Guy, thanks for taking the time to be with us this hour.
Hi, Evan. Thanks for having me. Good to be with you.
What did you make of that study that found that the more information parents got about the dangers of not vaccinating, the more likely they were not to vaccinate some of them, the backfire effect, that even evidence and science wasn't enough?
Yeah, it's no surprise at all. I mean, the backfire effect is very well known. And we have, you know, people should be educated about it, everyone, so that we're on guard, because none of us are immune from this. It's such a bizarre thing. You can be told you can be presented with overwhelming evidence that contradicts your position, but it's only going to make you hold on tighter to your position. And the reason is because, you know, briefly, because we are not computers. We think of our brains as computers, but they're not. You know, they're their own little weird, bizarre thinking machine. And what we have to consider is we've got this, you know, this subconscious mind that is going to do everything to hold on to your beliefs. And you've got to use your conscious mind to counteract that. You've got to really open up yourself to new ideas and maybe even letting go cherished beliefs or things that may feel awkward, uncomfortable to you to let go. You've got to do it if you want to be aligned with truth and reality.
Well, here's my idea, and you can tell me if you agree with this. I think we have a failure in our schools. One of the big errors I think we make in education is that we do not, at least to my knowledge, we do not teach confirmation bias. I think it should start in middle school, and it should be part of the discussion all the way through high school into college education, because I think adults need to understand what confirmation bias is and how it impacts them, and I think it almost never comes up in school. What do you think?
Oh, yeah. My next book has a pretty sizable section on the need to teach confirmation bias and about 100 other things to children starting in kindergarten.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Because, you know, it's just an absolute disaster that we don't, and I'm speaking of the world, not just America, worldwide, we don't teach children how to think. We just teach them what we think they should know. And that's such a mistake. And that's why we have all this craziness in the world, people believing so much nonsense and being so destructive to others and themselves. The primary reason, you know, the great unrecognized crisis of our world is that people are just terrible thinkers because we don't teach it. We don't encourage it. The best parents in the world, by and large, never sit their little children down at the edge of the bed and say, little Timmy, listen up. Tonight, I want to tell you how important it is for you to question things and to doubt and to seek evidence and to reconsider your position and to really strive for the rest of your life to be a critical thinker. Because once you get a handle on that, you'll never be perfect at it, but if you at least try, you're going to be set up for so much more success in life. You're going to be so much safer. You're going to be more productive, more efficient. This will be the best thing I can ever share with you. because you can't teach a child everything they should know and everything they should reject and all, because the world is too diverse. It's too, everything's changing. There's a new crackpot product on TV every 10 minutes. You know, you're never going to be able to have a list and say, okay, these are the things I should not accept or buy, and these are the things that are okay. You've got to know how to think. You've got to be ready for the next weird thing around the corner, for the next crazy claim that's coming at you. The only way you do that is by becoming a good thinker. And we could change the world. I mean, I write about this. I'm very passionate about it. We could change the world by just teaching children to think better.
My guest for the hour is Guy Harrison, one of my favorite authors. And one of the reasons I really like talking to Guy is Guy is known as someone who is sort of an upbeat skeptic. Sometimes folks like to try to tar this kind of a movement as sort of gloomy or dark. And Guy Harrison is always sort of optimistic, positive, kind of a hop in the step kind of mentality. And I know that that matters to you. I know that you address things very bluntly, but you also are sympathetic to the fact that, you know, we are human, that believing some of this stuff is in our DNA, you know, whether we like that or not.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I consider everything you just said to be a compliment, because that's what I'm all about. I'm trying to, you know, help people, not beat somebody in an argument, not win a debate. I'm offering a hand up for my fellow human, you know, and I am very humble about all the stuff I address, because, you know, if you're an arrogant skeptic, you're not doing it right, because the thing you learn when you study the human brain, you know, how it came together, how it works, and when you study critical thinking, and when you look at all the madness out there that people believe every day and everywhere, you start to realize, you know, this is just a human phenomenon. This is about being human. I'm not smarter than these people. I'm not better than these people necessarily, not by any means. You know, they are human. And it could be any of us. We all will believe crazy things at some point in our life. So, we're all in this together, and that's the attitude I approach it all with. And you know, let me say real quick, Evan, just to turn it back to what you opened with, the backfire effect, you know, that's one of the things I'm very aware of in all of my books. I always make an effort to be less confrontational, and you have to confront. I mean, you got to be tough. I'm not going to say I'm completely soft all the time, but I try my best to align it with people and try to reach them in a way that they can sense that I'm coming at this and saying, hey, let's just figure out what's true and what's real here together. I'm not trying to beat you up. I'm trying to just, you know, stand here next to you and looking at this challenge before both of us. So it's not, I just try to approach it that way. It's much more effective because, you know, the study you cited talking about the vaccine parent, the anti-vaccine parents and all that, even though they get all this information, they still dig in deeper. Well, understanding that, I think, should lead people who advocate science and reason to be more sympathetic and to try to be friendlier and kinder and more understanding to these people. Because, you know, you've got this shadow brain, this subconscious, and it's not about just plugging in the right information. They have to trust you to a degree. They've got to like you to a degree. As shallow as that sounds, if somebody doesn't like you, they're much less likely to listen to you. If somebody thinks you might be a little shifty, you know, because there's so much going on. I mean, you know, we will trust or not trust somebody just based on something like facial symmetry, you know, how well aligned their eyebrows are. I mean, it's absurd. So you've got all these things going on when you're trying to win somebody over and get them to maybe open their eyes a bit more. So it's really challenging. And you make it even harder, if not impossible, if you come off arrogant, if you come off condescending, and if you just try to beat people up and win a debate.
Well, let's be blunt. Would if this country did a better job of raising thinkers, would Dr. Oz still be making millions of dollars?
not with the same format of the TV show he's got now. I don't think so. He wouldn't last 5 minutes if people could think. I mean, yeah, he's just, you know, from my point of view, he's just peddling pseudoscience and nonsense mixed in with real medical science, and he's got that aura of credibility, you know, because he has a real degree and all that. He's a real doctor, a very accomplished doctor. But, you know, it's sad. That's the thing, you know, and who knows? I wouldn't even go so far as to call him a crook or a con artist. Not at all. You know, I'm most cases, you know, I give people the benefit of the doubt because I know no matter how academically accomplished someone is, no matter how intelligent they may be, no matter how well-meaning they may be, they can be absolutely wrong about stuff. So he has clearly advocated lots of nonsense. He's, pushed a lot of absurd products that are just not backed up by science, that no doctor, no good doctor should be doing. He's done that over and over and over. But, like I said, he could believe it himself. That's why you got to be careful. It's not a matter of trusting someone. Someone could be telling the truth in their head, and they could be totally wrong.
Talking to Guy Harrison, author of a number of books about the value of skepticism, and we're going to get to your phone calls coming up here. I see the phone starting to ring, and I haven't even mentioned the number. I should do that. If you want to call the program and join the conversation on the value of skepticism, it's 844-295-TALK. Toll free, 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI, 263-9994, and I'll grab our first call. It's Keith. Go ahead, Keith.
Interesting. So I'm a consummate cynic. If somebody makes a claim, show me the proof. And I have these heated debates with people who are extremely religious. Do any of your books address religion?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I have two specifically about religion. My first book is 50 Reasons People Give for Believing in a God. And that's sort of a I've traveled a lot, been to six continents, many, many countries, interviewed many, many people of all sorts of religions. And that this book sort of came out of that. And it's just a general look at the claim that a god or gods are real. And I look at various problems with it from a skeptic's perspective. And then I have another one, a more recent book called 50 Simple Questions for Every Christian. And that one is just looking at various aspects of Christianity specifically. And I explain why the majority of the world just hasn't bought it. Why don't we believe in this salvation thing? Why are so many people unconvinced by this claim? And I did it in a very respectful, hopefully a very respectful, gentle way, because it seems to have succeeded, because many, many Christians read the book, and I've got a lot of feedback, and it's done one of the goals of the book. I wanted Christians to start understanding more why, not everybody believes what they believe. I want them to understand, because usually they dismiss non-Christians, especially atheists, as people who are, crazy or evil or just too arrogant to be humble before God and all this stuff. And they don't really get the reasons why the Bible is not convincing us, why prayer is not a good argument, doesn't prove anything, this kind of stuff.
What I find are people, they have common sense, but I think they ultimately want something more. And I just tell them, I'm an atheist, I'll be honest, and I used to live in a kosher home, if you catch my drift. You just approach it from the point of logic, and it doesn't fit beliefs and logic. Ergo, now I'm the consummate cynic, but that's totally different. And if you look at throughout world history, the problems that organized religion has brought to mankind, it hasn't been the greatest decision. I mean, even Hitler believed he was appointed by God to lead the Aryan race, and we know how well that worked out.
Guy, what do you think? Thanks for the call. What do you think, Guy?
Yeah, I'm with you. I would say this. You keep calling yourself, talking to the caller, you call yourself a cynic. That's sort of conjures up images of negativity and a closed mind and all. I would, suggest you consider calling yourself a skeptic, one who just questions and one who has the courage to doubt and to try to get at what's real and true, because and keeps an open mind. That's part of being a skeptic. I'm very open minded. I mean, I'm not convinced by any religious claims of any kind, as far as supernatural stuff and all that. But I'm open-minded to it, and I tell people religious all the time, yeah, I'm open-minded to it. And I explain to them, I can understand why you may desire something like a heaven, an afterlife, or having a God watching over you and listening to your prayers. I can completely understand that. And to hope for that is fine. That sounds pretty human, actually, maybe to hope for something like that. But when you pretend to know it, to know that it's absolutely true beyond a shadow of a doubt, that's where something's going a little haywire in the head, and you need to I would suggests you need to rethink that.
Well, and Keith and Guy, correct me if I'm wrong, you had a section, I think, in 50 Popular Beliefs That People Think Are True about why do people believe their religion is the one true, you know, or one of the beliefs is my religion is the one true religion. And when you, the way you framed it was a way that I hadn't quite considered it exactly in these terms, which is that there have been thousands of religions in the history of humanity, and for most human beings alive today are of the religion of whatever they were born into in their household. That's just a fact. And if that religion happens to be the one true one, they would have really had to hit a religious lottery for that to be the case. And I think, Guy, I don't know if I'm describing your writing exactly right. It's been a little while since I read it, but that opened up my eyes to that point that before that I hadn't thought of in that way.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. I mean, that's, you know, you tell me where you're born, and I can make a really, really, really good guess as to what your religion is if you are religious. You know, if you're from Saudi Arabia, I can take a pretty good shot, you know, and get it right most of the time. If you're from southern India, I'll probably get it right. If you're from North Carolina, I'm probably going to get it right. You know, it's just because we trust what mommy and daddy tell us. We are reinforced. Our beliefs are reinforced by our culture. So, yeah, some people do change, but, you know, 99% don't. They stick with what they were told in childhood is true, and that's it. They just, you know, don't question it. And that's the thing. It's interesting you brought that up, because just a few days ago, I had a long discussion with two Mormon missionaries, and I brought that up. I said, well, how do you think you were so fortunate to be born in Utah and be exposed to the one true version of Christianity, Mormonism, and all these other people? I said, what about the little kids? You know, I've been to madrasas in the Middle East, and I've seen little boys, you know, just bobbing up and down, memorizing the Quran all day long, you know, 10-year-old kids. And I say, well, what if you were born there and that was you? You know, I mean, is that just tough luck? Too bad for you? Or how does it work? And, you know, their answer was that, well, it's all God's plan. He put me in Utah so that I would be a Mormon and have the truth, and he didn't them. So they've got to work it out some other way, you know. And that's, I don't know, that's a pretty rough way to look at it. That's what they told me. But, yeah, there's so many human natural explanations for what's going on when it comes to religion, you know. It doesn't disprove the existence of any gods. I don't think I wouldn't go that far. You know, I'm open-minded, like I said. But anything you come at me with, from you know, with these supernatural claims tied to religions, I can make a pretty good natural explanation for what it probably is.
We're talking to Guy Carrison, who is the author of a number of books on skepticism, including 50 Popular Beliefs That People Think Are True, Think Why You Should Question Everything, and the forthcoming in October, Good Thinking, What You Need to Know to Be Smarter, Safer, Wealthier, and Wiser. Before I get back to the phones, and I'm going to get your phone calls again in just a second, Judy and others, we're coming to you next. Guy, tell me what you think would happen, just say, in this country, if, let's say it's 25 years from now, and starting in 2015, every elementary school, I don't know, English social studies class, wherever you would want to do it, started teaching confirmation bias as a concept, and that was a yearly concept reminder for students about what confirmation bias is, starting at a young age. 25 years from now, what would be different?
Well, that would help, but I wouldn't think just confirmation bias. There's so much more. You know, we need to understand about subconscious, the way we make decisions, these gut impulses when we meet someone or we're confronted by a choice to buy something. I would, can I stretch your example to
Sure.
teach more than just confirmation bias? Yeah, like, you know, there's motivated reasoning, which is like sort of confirmation bias on steroids. That's when you really go out of your way and you research and you tear down opposing views. You know, confirmation bias is sort of passive. That's when you just sort of, you notice facts, data, information, observations, you notice them and pay attention to them and remember them because they confirm a belief you already hold. And at the same time, you sort of ignore, you miss, you forget quickly anything that contradicts the belief you hold. So that's sort of passive. But in addition to that, you got motivated reasoning where you head off to the library and you start researching so you can, you know, show that vaccines are going to kill us all, or that, you know, global warming is a big lie. You know, Al Gore made it up or something. You know, you go do research for years to prove it. You know, that's motivated reasoning. And You've got that. You've got about probably, you know, I would teach 50 more of these biases and fallacies. You know, we need to know this. And I would also try to inspire kids just to understand that they've got this wonderful human brain, this 3 pounds of like jelly in their skull that is just magical. I mean, it is just amazing. You know, this haphazard construction over millions of years of evolution just thrown together and made to work on the fly. You know, you couldn't put it in dry dock and stop thinking and design it well. It's just layered this and that put together, and it's all come together, and it just works so well as far as being creative and, you know, we can imagine. Any, you know, I can imagine not only this universe, other universes. I mean, it's just incredible what you could pack into a skull thanks to our brain. Okay, so I would teach them all that. Now, to answer your question, if I got kids exposed to all that, would it be some sort of science utopia where crime is gone and everything is perfect? No, not at all. Absolutely not. A lot of people are always quick to jump on me and say, oh, you just believe, you know, this Star Trek future where everything's perfect. And I say, no, but it would be a hell of a lot better than this. I guarantee it. I can't imagine it wouldn't be better. I mean, it would almost have to be. Okay. I mean, anything can happen. Who knows? But I think it would have to be better, because when you consider the price we pay every day, people literally die. I don't think, you know, I wrote about this in my next book as well. People literally die every moment. While we're doing this show, Evan, right now talking, you and I, people are dying around the world because they were sloppy thinkers, because they took some nonsense medicine that harmed them. They didn't go to the doctor because they trusted their psychic. There's so many different, they're fighting for ISIS because they think these are the end times and they want to be on the right side of God and all this. So they're over in the Middle East blowing stuff up, cutting people's heads off. You've got all sorts of stuff going on in the name of absolute nonsense that has not been verified by any sort of rational thought process. So people suffer, they lead diminished lives, and they die. So if we could chip away at that to a significant degree, my gosh, what a better world. Think of all the potential, the human potential we waste because of just plain stupidity and ignorance that could be fixed with a couple of classes in elementary school. I mean, so much. You know, who knows what kind of brilliant minds we lose because they get sucked up into some crazy organization that discourages thinking, you know, and there are many of those. They literally tell people, don't think. Don't ask questions. Don't read any. You know, like I said, I've been to schools where all children could read or were told to read is the Quran. Nothing else. The teacher told me himself, we have no need for any other books. It's not a matter of funding. We don't need history books. We don't need science books. We don't need any of that stuff. We don't need fiction books. None of that. All the children need is the Quran. And they, all day long, they read it, memorize it. That's all they do. You know, to me, somewhere in that classroom of kids that I saw, there could have been, who knows, there could have been, you know, the next Shakespeare. There could have been the next Jonas Salk, you know, but we'll never know. We'll never know.
Judy in Penfield has been waiting to talk to author Guy Harrison. Go ahead, Judy.
Hi. I'm not going to say everything I know because it might sound weird to people, but I know it. I go to an ancient school of wisdom for 26 years in Washington State, and what we call social consciousness is what most people are doing. And like he said, they just do what other people do. They don't question or anything. When I was 8 years old, I remember standing on my front porch saying, who am I really? And when you ask the question, the answer will come. I say to people, do you want to know why we're living? And they look at me like I'm crazy. But I found out why we're living. I found out. I'm not going to say it on the air, but out in the West Coast, people are more open to things. So in the East, it's heavier vibrations, heavier. And people are more, I think, into social consciousness. And I was a teacher, and the whole education system is dumbing kids down. You could Google deliberately dumbing down, and you'll see what's behind it.
Okay. Judy, thank you for the call. Guy, what do you think?
Not sure, but, just to make a comment, I'm not sure it directly relates to her, but, you know, personal experience is one of the most common justifications given for extraordinary beliefs. Or unusual beliefs, or maybe beliefs that are a little bit, you know, are a lot questionable. And I would just warn people about personal experiences. There is the way our brains work, and my next book, Good Thinking, is filled with this stuff, but the way our brains work as far as perceiving the world around us, the way we see, hear, touch, It's not what you think it is, okay? This is another thing that should be taught to every child on the planet. If we understood how we're really just getting a version, a presentation of reality fed to us by our brains, in our brains, we would be much more skeptical when we think we hear the voice of a ghost, or we see a ghost in our bedroom, or we see a spaceship in the sky, or when we feel the presence of a God, or when we have a prayer answered or something. You know, we would that should be the first thing we think of. We should say, wow, that was bizarre. That is weird. Okay, but wait a minute. I'm a human with a human brain. And I know, because thousands of scientific studies have confirmed that you can hear, see, feel something that is just not real. And it'll feel 100% real. You know, I just recently wrote about an example. I did a little thing on a deserted island by myself for 4 days in the Caribbean, just kind of like a solo camping thing to take a break from civilization, you know. And one night when I was on the beach and the waves were crashing, the wind was blowing, I heard somebody scream my name. I heard, "Guy," somebody yelled it, and it freaked me out. I thought, what the heck? Because this is a tiny little island. Nobody was there. And I actually went and, like, investigated. I went looking. I was scared maybe drug dealers had come ashore in a boat or something, you know. I don't know how they'd know my name, but I went and looked, you know. I mean, it was so real to me. But eventually I thought, hey, it's an auditory hallucination, you know. It's just, it was in my head. That's the most likely explanation.
We are late for a break, and when we come back here, we're going to talk to Guy Harrison about new research polls from Pew regarding climate change, for example. We're going to talk about the fact that in a local town, a 50-year ban on psychic mediums was just lifted. Guy has experience as a psychic medium. We're going to talk to him about that and learn more about what his upcoming October book is all about. Your phone calls as well when we come back with author Guy Harrison on Connections. Guy Harrison's the author of 50 Popular Beliefs That People Think Are True, Think Why You Should Question Everything, and the next book is called Good Thinking, What You Need to Know to Be Smarter, Safer, Wealthier, and Wiser, out in the fall. Is that right, Guy?
Yes. Comes out October 6th, I believe.
And what's the goal of the next book?
Yeah, it's a comprehensive. I'm really, really excited about this book. It was hard work, but I loved writing it. I'm still tinkering with it a bit now with the editing, you know, with the publisher and all that, but it's mostly done. But I learned so much more. It just goes much deeper, deeper down from all this skeptical, critical thinking stuff. Because, like I said earlier, you've got to understand the human brain. You know, if you're going to be a good thing, imagine being a Formula One race car driver or a NASCAR driver, and you've never looked under the hood of a car, and you have no idea what a radiator is, what it does, what a fan belt is. I mean, you probably wouldn't be the best driver you could be, right? Well, that's what I'm trying to explain to people, how their brains work, how they're put together, what the brain does to us on a daily basis as far as taking care of us, but also taking many, many shortcuts in life. And there's so many examples. Your brain does a great job of keeping you alive from minute to minute. That's why we're still here, okay? And that's why we're doing well as a species. But it's terrible at figuring out, you know, should I buy this or that, or should I trust this person or that? It's sometimes it's okay. I shouldn't say it's terrible, but it's inconsistent. You can't trust it all the time. And when it's something really important, okay, when it's something really matters, like should I go for this cancer treatment or that cancer treatment? Should I invest in this or that? Should I go to a psychic or a psychologist? You know, when you make these kind of decisions, your brain may not be most reliable friend you've got, okay? Because that huge part of it, that huge portion, the subconscious, is just going to tug and pull you in ways that may be irrational, that may not make sense for you in the long run. So you've got to really be a vigorous critical thinker. You've got to really understand what's going on in your own head, and you've got to work to really come to the best decisions for your life. And so this book wraps it all up. It puts it all in one package. And I tell you, I'm so excited about it because it's the kind of book I finally, it's got everything in it, everything. But I think, honestly, this sounds absurdly arrogant, so forgive me, but it's got everything in it that I think everybody in the world should know. So I think it would make, you know, people just safer and better people if they knew this information. And I've written in a very readable way, so it's it doesn't matter, you know, what sort of academic background you've got or anything. You know, any high school kid could read it easily. And honestly, I tell you, if I win the lottery between now and October, I'm going to give 10 million copies away for free, you know, because I believe in this so much that it can really, really help people.
All right, let me get to the phones. We'll try to move pretty quickly here because we had a lot of ground to cover in the next 20 minutes with author Guy Harrison. This is Ben in Rochester. Go ahead, Ben.
Ben. Hi, how you guys doing?
Yeah, go ahead, Ben. Thanks.
Yeah, my question is, where do morals come from in our culture? If, the author's saying that, you know, he's most likely an atheist or whatever, and he believes that, you know, everything needs to be confirmed through evidence, which I think is a good idea, but he's purporting that the world's going to be a better place if we all think in absolute, you know, confirmation, whatever. I just don't know how it's going to get any better if we remove people's faith. Because if there's no reason to be moral, then why would we get any better?
Ben, stay on the line because this is an important question, and I think you and Guy can have a good back and forth here. So Ben, stay there. Guy, go ahead.
Yeah, well, the first reaction to that is that we've already run the experiment. We know you don't need religion to be good. You know, we've done it. I wrote about this in a couple of my books. You can look at statistics with countries that have very high rates of religious belief, very intense religious participation rates, all that stuff, and they're filled with crime. Women are treated terribly. Children are treated terribly. Corruption is high. And then you have other societies where religious belief is extremely low and the ratio of atheists is very high. Religious worship attendance is extremely low, and yet they're among the safest, most progressive, enlightened societies on earth. They're more fair, less corruption. And you can even see that within the United States. You can do comparisons between certain states that have relatively higher rates of atheism and lower rates of church attendance, for example, against states that have very high church attendance, very, very low rates of atheism. And look at the crime rates. Look at the, anything you want to look at, teen pregnancy, you know, STDs. You can know, it's just incredible. Now, that doesn't really prove anything about the existence of gods or anything like that. Not at all, not at all. But what I'm saying, it shows that the presence of religion is not some guarantee of moral behavior. Not at all, not at all. And the thing is, I always tell religious people, and they say, because they're always baffled, like, well, if you don't believe in God, how can you be moral? And I don't need, you know, I don't think any rational, decent human being needs to believe in a God in order to know that murdering people or robbing, raping, that these things are destructive for you, but they're also just not nice. You know, if I get upset with somebody, I won't shoot them first, you know, because the second reason would be because I wouldn't want to go to prison the rest of my life. But the first reason would be because I'm empathetic, because I know, I can imagine how horrible it would be to have a bullet go into your body and kill you or wound you, you know, and I wouldn't want to do that to somebody because I can sympathize. And the thing is, it's not even a human thing. Look at bonobo chimps in the wild. I mean, they exhibit, and other species as well, exhibit what we would call moral behavior. They help each other. They share. They protect each other. They do all sorts of things that we, you know, if it was humans doing it, you'd say it's good moral behavior. So, and I don't think you would, I don't think anybody's going to say they have a bonobo god that they're getting their morals from. You know, it's just a, smart social cooperation is a good survival strategy for some types of social unit.
All right, Ben, what do you think?
I mean, the idea that we can compare different countries or counties in the U.S., you know, between, you know, their various religious beliefs or lack thereof, and then compare their moralities, I mean, that's really not something that you can just throw out there, because nobody in their right mind is going to be able to compile all that data and say, okay, yeah, well, this one's more moral than that one. I mean, what's the grounds of morality in the first place?
Probably crime inequality. Rate. Yeah, probably crime inequality is.
The murder rate.
Where did the idea come from? Where did the idea come from in our minds? I mean, you're saying that in nature you see a form of social morality, you know, whatever. But in some parts of nature, the mother eats its mate, you know, and doesn't think twice about it. In some parts of nature, you know, like a lion, for example, will eat his young just because he doesn't like them or for whatever reason. Those would be incomprehensible to us as humans, but why is it incomprehensible to us? And that's my question.
Well, first of all, it's not. I mean, religious people do horrible things every day. The ISIS people are very religious. Look how they're behaving.
I'm not purporting one way or the other. I'm just posing the question of, you know, if we need to scientifically confirm someone's religious beliefs, obviously it's impossible to, they're based on faith, but then how do we establish this utopia that you're talking about when there's no absolute reason for morals in the first place? Because if we're evolved from, you know, times past, which is the scientific prevailing theory, then in all reality, we should all be fighting to get to the head of the line all the time. Right?
No, Ben. First of all, we are evolved from times past. It is the prevailing scientific theory because we do have evidence that we are. And why wouldn't we be good to each other, even if religion as a construct never came to mankind? Why wouldn't we be good to each other? Can you tell me why wouldn't we?
In the pure basis form, we would do it because it benefits us more than the opposing viewpoint. So instead of me killing my mate, it might make more sense for me to keep it alive and live with it peacefully. That could be the basis reason, sure.
I guess I'm confused. If your argument is that lack of religion would lead to a lack of morality, I'm confused about why that is.
No. What I'm trying to say is I don't think that we can say that without religious faith that there's any idea that we would be more moral, because that's basically what is being said, is we would be more moral without faith, without any sort of religion. And I don't believe that that's true.
Oh, no, well, I'm not sure. I didn't say we'd be better people without religion, because religion, I mean, okay, I'm fair and honest when it comes to religion, okay? Because religion is not based on evidence, it's infinitely flexible. That's why you have Muslims right now that are part of the Islamic State who are beheading people. But guess what? You also have millions and millions of Muslims who are the sweetest people on earth. I've been to Syria. I've been to Jordan. I've been to Egypt. I've met them. They're the greatest people in the world. They'll give you the shirt off their back, you know, to a stranger. Okay. So religion, and they will do it in the name of Allah. You know, so religion, you have Christians, you have some Christians who picket the funerals of gay people and call them fags and all this stuff, and they cite the Bible. And then you have other Christians who donate time at an AIDS clinic or something back in the 80s when everybody else was scared, and they were citing the Bible as a justification for them being so great and giving to others, to strangers. You know, so religion can lead you anywhere you want to go, really, because it's not based on anything. It's whatever you want. I mean, that's why we have hundreds of thousands of varieties of religion, and we have literally millions of gods, okay? Because I would suggest it's all made up. Maybe not, but that's what I would suggest. So it's totally flexible. So if you take away religion, we're still going to have greedy people. We're still going to have jerks. We're still going to have murderers. We're still going to have problems and all that. What I was saying, though, if you take away sloppy thinking, you could still have, you could have critical thinkers, very good, vigorous critical thinkers around the world and still have religions. You really could. I know many. There are many extremely sharp thinkers who are religious, but they will kind of tell you, in my discussions, I'm giving personal experience, they'll tell you that when you pin them down, that it's more of a hope. They hope there's heaven. They hope they see their parents one day after they die. They hope there's some sort of a salvation thing, but they don't pretend to know it, and they don't point to an ancient book and say, this is the literal truth. We should do every word it says and all that. So there's all sorts of varieties of religious belief. And I would never suggest that removing religion from the world is going to bring on utopia. Not at all. Not at all. Because a lot of people do good things in the name of religion. You know, I would suggest you could be good without religion, but, you know, some people seem to need it. So I don't know. I mean, a world without religion, I don't know what that would look like. But I do know that a world without sloppy thinking in general has got to be better than this.
Ben, last word?
Well, I completely agree that if we teach our children to be critical thinkers in everything, then it would make this world a much better place. So thank you for taking the time to talk to
you. Yeah, Ben, thanks for the call. Go ahead, Guy.
Thank you, Ben. Yeah, I just wanted to add one more thing to Ben, is that, you know, I make this point in my first book, 50 Reasons People Give for Believing in a God, that I care about religious people every bit as much as I care about anybody else. And so I encourage religious people to be good skeptics, to be good critical thinkers. And if they can't let go of their religion, fine. Then don't. If you really, really feel you cannot let go of your religious belief, then hold on to it. You know, I don't want to bring misery and sadness to someone's life. Last thing in the world I want to do. So go ahead and hold on to it, but still do the best you can at skeptical thinking. Do the best you can, because even within the context of a religion, people are exploited, abused, taken advantage of in all sorts of ways all the time. You could be a Christian, okay, and if you were a somewhat good skeptic who is a Christian, then you're less likely to get fleeced by some slimeball TV preacher who's going to tell you he needs more money for his jet, you know, his private jet. If you're devoutly religious, but you've got enough good critical thinking skills to know that, hey, I should take my child to the doctor because they're very sick, rather than stay at home and just pray and hope it goes away, then you know what? You've done yourself a favor by being the best critical thinker you could be, even if you still are very religious. That's fine. So this is not an either-or thing. You know, I tell people, look, wherever you're at, get better at skeptical thinking. Get better at being a critical thinker as much as you can take. Just do that.
All right, we're down to our last 9 minutes. Every phone line is filled up. We've got to move quickly. So if I come to you, we've got to try to be moving. So, Guy, my last two quick questions, and then we'll kick it to our audience for the rest of the hour, is this. Pew Research says, in September they did a poll. 61% of Americans now believe there is solid evidence that the Earth has been warming. That was celebrated as a kind of a big moment, that a strong majority of Americans believe, 61%, the evidence is there for it. But to me, that says 39% still won't say that the evidence is there for it. What's the headline to you?
Yeah, but it's progress, I suppose. But it's just political. I mean, I wrote about this in 50 Popular Beliefs. It's a political situation. If Sarah Palin had introduced global warming to America back in the 80s and 90s, then guess what? Most Democrats would be struggling to accept it. And every Republican would accept it as obviously true. You know, America is so politically divided, and people are so tribal in their thinking. And the problem you raise, confirmation bias, once a trusted figure, an authority figure they believe in, says something, they're probably going to go with it and then defend it forever. So that's, whenever I see these global warming, the split, you know, and accept or reject, it's just all about politics. There are very few flaming liberals who reject climate change, and there are very few super hardcore, intense conservatives who accept it, you know, and that's because of their political position. It's not about not even about their view of science, really, because on other issues it might be different.
All right, and the last quick question I have for you is, I mentioned that a local town has lifted a 50-year ban on psychics. What's your 30-second version of the story you told in 50 Popular Beliefs about how you posed as a psychic once and what happened?
Yeah, it shocked me. I did a cold reading of a woman, a very intelligent woman. I pretended to be a psychic, and I thought I blew it. But afterwards, she leaned in, and she said to me, "My gosh, that was unbelievable. How long have you had these powers?" And I was stunned because she, even though I fumbled through it, didn't think I did a great job. She was absolutely convinced that I had read her mind and knew her future. And it really taught me a lesson years ago about how virtually anyone can fall for anything. You've got to be on guard.
All right, Tom on Twitter wants to know, what does Guy think is the single most preposterous thing we as humans believe?
Oh my gosh, that is a tough one, Tom. One of the most preposterous things we believe is that we are so special, that we are absolutely removed from everything, that there's humanity and then everything else, because that's such a dangerous and destructive attitude. Because, yeah, we are special, absolutely. There's nothing like our brains in the known universe, not yet, not that we know of yet. And so, yeah, we're special, but we are still a life form on this planet, and we are so intimately tied to the biodiversity of this world. And when we think of ourselves as so separate and so special, it's self-destructive, because it allows us to do terrible things to the planet, other life forms, and it's a real, real problem. We should be a little more humble about ourselves.
All right, back to the phones. Let's move quickly. Yardenia, go ahead, Yardenia.
Yardenia, yes, thank you. I absolutely agree with anything and everything that your guest said. I'm atheist from birth, and I agree with the fact that you don't need a religion to be moral. Morality is come with life. So I believe that societies always have morals. Like even some mammals have morals. They have their own tribe or whatever, and they still share, and like you said. However, the reason for my call this time is because I also never questioned, when I had a young kid, the vaccination. Never questioned it. And I still don't question this, except one thing happening in this country. In this country, everything goes with politics, as usual, and unfortunately, politicians are both. And I heard just last Friday in the Bill Maher program, who is, he's very liberal, but he's also a fun guy.
He was questioning vaccines, yes.
Yeah, you know, he invited for his program a bestseller writing author, Robert F. Kennedy Jr.
One of the Kennedys, yep.
Yeah, the name of the book is Theme Rosa, Let the Science Speak. And the evidence supporting the immediate removal of mercury, a known neurotoxin, from vaccines. However, the story goes that in 1989, Congress made a decision about this Thermosa, whatever the
Thimerosal. Yep, Thimerosal.
Yeah, and not all vaccines have it as a preservative, but some do. And according to him, that the mercury is about 1,000 times more toxic than lead.
Okay, I got to let you go, Yardena. Guy, I know you've heard that line of argument before. What do you say?
Yeah, well, you know what? I absolutely welcome people. We shouldn't say vaccines are great, let's all take them forever. You should always be rethinking, reconsidering, retesting. You should always be concerned, especially with children, babies. So, you know, I welcome it, but you can't just scare people and say, there's this, there's that, it's so horrible, stop taking vaccines. You need to make your case, okay? Right now, vaccines save about 9 million people per year around the world. And if we could get more vaccines to more people, it would save an additional 16 million people per year, okay? So vaccines are doing a hell of a lot of good right now, okay? So we can't just tear them down out of fear and stop using them.
Well, and there's a woman who goes as the food babe, and she loves to find a chemical in a food without any understanding of its place within the way it was made, how much of it, parts per million, parts per billion, how much would be toxic. She just sees mercury and she thinks evil, or she, you know, so that kind of sort of unscientific approach to it can be detrimental.
Yeah, but absolutely we should be constantly investigating these kind of things. We should never think we've got it all figured out, the answer's done, forget it, move on. No, we always doubt. We always ask questions. We always challenge. That's how science works. That's what's great about science. And you could make somebody scared of anything, air, water, dirt, everything, you know, everything. So yeah, keep investigating, but until you make your case, we got to look at all those millions of lives that vaccines save every year.
Guy, you put me in a hard spot because I'm going to end this program with every single phone line still lit up waiting to talk to you. So here's what I think we should do. Guy is on Twitter, for example. What's your Twitter handle, Guy?
Harrison Author.
Harrison Author on Twitter. So at Harrison Author. If you've got a question or a comment that you couldn't fit in on the show, find him there. Or contact him and get in touch, Guy. He's very accessible, and he's the author of a number of books. The next book is Good Thinking, What You Need to Know to Be Smarter, Safer, Wealthier, and Wiser. That is coming in October. So if I couldn't get your call or comment, I apologize. We just got slammed in the hour with interest, which is a good problem to have, and his name's Guy Harrison. He's easy to find. 20 seconds, Guy. Are you more optimistic than you were when you really started writing these books, or are you concerned with sort of the level of thinking epistemology in this country?
No, I am. Maybe it's just my personality, but I am more optimistic because I think that we can achieve fantastic, wonderful improvement just by thinking better.
Magnus on Twitter says, thanks to connections with Evan Dawson and Guy Harrison for the quote of the day. You have 3 pounds of jelly in your skull, and it's magical. Guy, that was well said. thanks for taking the time to talk about skepticism on this program, and let's make this an annual thing, because obviously we didn't get through all the interest and all the calls today, so we'll come back sometime, I hope.
Anytime, Evan. It's always a pleasure. You're a smart host. I like being with you.
Well, I love having you. Guy Harrison, author on the line with us for the hour. And again, thanks for all the interest and the phone calls and the tweets and the comments. Great interest in this subject. Thanks for listening today. Thanks to the great engineer Val LaBanca behind the glass. I'm Evan Dawson, and this is Connections on member-supported public radio.